One of the few pillars of Canadian national identity is our perceived role as both a peacekeeper and peacemaker around the world. It is Canada's darker side that author and activist Eve Engler scrutinizes in the Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy, a thick account of this country's foreign policy record, one that seriously challenges the perception of Canada as a force for good in the world. In fact, Eve Engler's book is a reality check about Canada's role on the world stage and a shockingly dirty laundry list of our activities abroad, from Africa to Asia to Latin America to the Middle East. I had the opportunity to speak with Eve Engler for Citizenshift.
The book really comes out of my role in the Haiti Solidarity Movement. After the Canadian government helped overthrow Haiti's elected government in February 2004 and supported a brutal dictatorship that killed thousands of people, in working against Canadian policy in Haiti, or learning about Canadian policy in Haiti, I was really taken aback to the extent which the Canadian government participated in this real imperial crime against the Haitian people. So after the worst of the political repression in Haiti subsided, I decided to look at whether Canada had acted in similar ways elsewhere. So I guess going into the Haiti Solidarity Movement, I was fairly naive about Canada's role in the world. You know, I knew that there was a history of dispossession of First Nations people, that there was a class dynamics within Canadian society, but I certainly didn't think that Canada acted in the same way as Washington does. And so the Haiti Solidarity work really opened my eyes up to that. Secondly, while participating in the Haiti Solidarity Movement, we found that many Canadians had a hard time believing what we were saying the Canadian government was doing in Haiti. People would have a hard time believing us when we said that the Canadian International Development Agency was financing a highly partisan Haitian human rights organization that was basically concocted lies to justify the imprisonment of the constitutional prime minister, the constitutional interior minister. And so Canadians really would have a hard time believing what we were saying was taking place in Haiti. And so sort of to understand a bit more about this myth of Canada as a force for good in the world and this sort of mythology that we have as Canadians that our country is the peacekeeper, the idea of, you know, Lester Pearson and the Nobel Peace Prize, and there's this really serious mythology in this country that Canada is a force for good in the world. And actually numerous studies suggest that Canadians have the highest self-appraisal of their country's role in the world. So the point of this book is really to look at this myth of Canada as just a do-gooder around the world.
Why do you think this view exists in terms of viewing Canada as a force for good in the world? Why does this view widely exist in Canadian society? It certainly does. Where is it coming from? If actions are so different from that idea that Canada, in fact, is a force for good, if our actions around the world are so different from that, why does it exist so widely across Canada?
The first reason, I think, is that Canada didn't officially have colonies, leaving aside the process of colonization internally. Unlike many or most European, Western European countries or Japan, Canada never officially had foreign colonies. Mm-hmm. In fact, that wasn't for a lack of trying, where the Canadian government actually tried to annex the British Caribbean at the early 1900s. But I think the mythology in the more current phase is really tied to peacekeeping and Lester Pearson. And I think really the brilliance of someone like Lester Pearson and the whole UN peacekeeping that he sort of brought onto the stage was that it was really actually advancing U.S. geopolitical interests in the context of the Cold War. But he was able to spin that as benevolent peacekeeping that was about, you know, sort of saving the children. That was a sort of line that was put forward. The Canadian government has played this sort of good cop role to the bad cop U.S. for much of the past 50 years. Canada really sort of takes on these types of foreign policy endeavors that are sort of really packaged in high-minding sounding ways, such as peacekeeping or today with stuff like the responsibility to protect. So I think that the mythology really comes out of that. And also it comes out of the fact that the Canadian left has been really sort of caught up in this sort of left nationalist explanation of things, which is that Ottawa is forced to do bad things because Washington, the big bad Americans, pushes into it, not that there is actually a class structure or there's an elite within Canada that benefits from empire and Canada's role in that empire.
Canadian peacekeeping as supporting
U.S. policy in the global south. I think that for a lot of people, that's something that would be hard to believe. So Lester Pearson is a hero to many. Why do you put forward such a strong critique of peacekeeping as we understand it in Canada? Give us an example to explain what that means.
Modern peacekeeping is popularly understood to have begun with the Suez Crisis in 1956 in Egypt, when the British, French, and Israelis invaded Egypt. And what peacekeeping comes out of is actually the fact that Washington opposed that invasion, and Washington opposed the British, French, Israeli invasion for two reasons. One, because Washington was telling France and Great Britain that they were no longer the players in the Middle East, that there was a new power on the stage, that being Washington. And secondly, Washington opposed the invasion because they were worried that it added to Moscow's prestige among Arab governments. Lester Pearson worked hand-in-hand with the U.S. government to come up with the idea of the U.N. peacekeeping mission to Suez that ultimately came about. But Pearson's motivation for this peacekeeping mission was not to defend Egyptian sovereignty, was not to defend Egyptian civilians from being harmed. It was to defend U.S. geopolitical interests in the Middle East, full stop.
But civilians certainly were protected by the peacekeepers, Egyptian civilians.
For sure. And in the case of the Suez peacekeeping mission, the effect was relatively benevolent. In the case of the UN mission to the Congo, where the peacekeeping mission in 1960 to 1964 ultimately helped kill Patrice Lumumba, the Congolese independence leader, that was one of the serious crimes of the latter half of the 20th century, and helps explain in part why the Congo is so poor and messed up today. Canada participated heavily in that UN mission in the Congo. Likewise, the situation in Haiti is it's a UN mission that oversaw or consolidated the U.S. French-Canadian invasion that helped oust Haiti's elected president in February 2004. And the UN mission in Haiti supported thousands of Haitians being killed in a horrible campaign of political repression after the coup d'etat. Canadian foreign policy is basically motivated by two things. One, support for empire, historically the British Empire, today the American Empire. And that's not support for empire just for the sake of it or because those empires forced Canada or Ottawa into doing it. It's because the Canadian elite see empire as beneficial to their interests. Concurrently, Canadian foreign policy is motivated by supporting Canadian corporate interests abroad, despite the effect those corporate interests have on communities, whether the effect is benign or whether the effect leads to serious human rights violations. Canadian diplomacy, Canadian High Commission, Canadian embassies, Canadian trade offices around the world are working on a day-to-day basis to advance Canadian corporate interests, no matter their effect on the local populations.
If Canadian foreign policy today, in many places throughout the global south, is based on that relationship between governments, officials, the Foreign Service, and corporations, what do you feel Canada should be doing as an alternative to our policy be driven by corporations?
The first thing is the Canadian government should no longer support overthrowing elected governments as it did in Haiti in 2004 or the Salvador Allende government in Chile in 1973. One proposal I put forward, the Canadian Army should never be sent abroad unless there is a resolution of the entire UN General Assembly, not just the Security Council, which peacekeeping missions are actually under the control of, but the entire UN General Assembly. I think we should be significantly reducing the Canadian military budget. For me, above all else, the situation of Canadian foreign policy is so rotten that we have to work to reduce the amount of bad that Canada is doing in the world before we can move towards a situation of really concerning ourselves with sending aid teams or sending doctors around the world or different kinds of sort of charity-esque adventures. I think that what we need to do here in Canada is build a movement of critical consciousness towards Canadian foreign policy. So Canadians don't just take what politicians say they're doing around the world at their word, and that people actually look at the effects of the policy in a more critical way. And until we get to a point where we seriously democratize Canadian foreign policy, because ultimately Canadian foreign policy is shaped by this foreign policy establishment that's made up of the military generals, some military contractors, the big mining companies, the banks, a handful of politicians. The majority of Canadians have very little influence over this country's foreign policy, and I think that it's imperative that we work to democratize foreign policy and to build a movement that takes what Canada's doing in the world, takes it seriously, and works to orient that towards a more just policy.
So the situation in regards to Canadian foreign policy, could it change simply through an altercation of that policy, or does there need to be fundamental political change in the country?
First of all, I think that there's very little difference between the major political parties on foreign policy. Really? So on that plane, I think that the NDP provides a slightly more just version of Canadian foreign policy. But there are numerous examples where the NDP is totally supportive of the establishment, be that support for Israel historically, be that even the more recent case of Haiti. There are examples like Afghanistan where the NDP provides a better alternative. Okay. Secondly, I think that too many Canadians concerned with the world allow themselves to be co-opted by the state regarding foreign policy. So you have a history of something like CUSO, the Canadian University Services Overseas. We have young Canadians who are sort of internationally interested. Instead of fighting to build a social movement in Canada against Canadian policy around the world, instead would go to other countries to help teach or to help build a school. And to me, that's really the mistaken conception of the problems in this world. And the problems in this world are largely that countries in the global south where poverty is rampant, is that those people are being put into that position by political forces.
And is Canada one of them?
And all too often, Canada is one of those forces.
You've been listening to an interview with Eve Engler, author and activist, who recently published The Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy. This interview has been produced for Citizenshift by Stefan Christoph.